Good afternoon and welcome to the NRL podcast. No, it's not Zach Bailey. It sounds exactly the same. It's Jamie Soward doing a Zach Bailey impersonation. Joining me today is the man himself, Browse Bailey. You had a week away at Origin, mate. New South Wales have come back 1-0. Are they going to take out the series?
I hope they do. But they were impressive, almost as impressive as your introduction just then. I'm done. I don't know what to say. I'm redundant.
I've been telling people I can do this by myself.
That would be a great 40 minutes.
Well, maybe I'll have to. But anyway,
do you think that would help the audience? Do you think our numbers would boost if it was the same Jamie Soward Hour on his own?
Oh, I think we could change the name of the podcast to the Jamie Soward Hour or Sweet and Soward Hour.
We're going to have to speak to our producers. the Blues, they were impressive, weren't they?
Yeah, certainly will. Look, certainly were, sorry. They played a brand of footy where they got punched in the mouth early on and lost field possession early on in that game, but they hung in there and then they took their chances. They had minimal chances and they took them with both hands.
All right, we're going to talk a little bit of Origin later on because this is the last time we'll see each other before the teams are named ahead of Origin 2. We've got some good questions this week, so stay tuned for those. They're coming up a little bit later on. Sal, you'll go through those. A couple of rule changes this week. I want to get your thoughts on those. We've got some grabs from Todd Greenberg. Also, one of your former teammates, Peter Wallace, retiring. We'll hear from him as well. But tipping, we always touch on tipping.
Yeah.
I'm sad to say that I'm still down fourth from the bottom, but well done. Out in front, Jamie Soward, like the Dragons, leading the way on 64 points.
Yeah, I've built a little buffer up there at the top of the ladder. I don't know whether it means I know my footy or I don't know my footy with all the topsy-turvy results this year. But look, anytime you're in a tipping comp, I mean, the odds are stacked in my favour, Zach, because I'm in about 15 of them. The one at home is still losing, by the way, but I'm winning this one, and that's all that matters is this one.
And Michael Chalmers, special mention, he's six behind you, but he had a full round, first one of the year.
Yeah.
Imagine if he didn't.
Yeah.
He'd be dead last.
He's pretty ordinary, old Chalmers. But anyway.
Your power rankings. Interested to see if three changes at the top. So Penrith went from second to first, Melbourne went from third to second, and the Rabbitohs from first to third, all in one weekend of footy.
Yeah, and it's probably going to change again over the next couple of weeks. Origin guys backing up. I really dropped South a couple of places because I was disappointed that they've played North Queensland in the last month and they've played the Titans, both teams they should put away quite comfortably, and they've played a style of footy that they've still won, which is a sign of a good team, but they played a style of footy which really brought them down to the pack, and they played to the opposition, to be honest. So they had so many errors and so many chances to ice that game. I just expected better, and to be fair, the other two teams above that, I don't think anyone will be judging me and saying that they were better on the weekend, more impressive wins. So Parramatta are finally off bottom place. They've made their way up slowly up the power rankings. They won't get into the top eight or even the top 10 by the end of the year, but it was good for them to have a win.
Speaking of the team that's last, Manly, my boys.
Yeah,
from 13th to 16th, what didn't you like about their performance?
You lose Apisai Corosau early on, I understand that. Matt Wright came on and tried his best, but it was just some of the efforts on the edges from their defence. Their patterns, DCE's not having a good run at the moment. He's really under the pump. An article came out today which magnifies the situation and blows it up even more. We're going to get into their situation a little bit later, but they are diabolical at the moment, Manly. They look like they're going to try for 10 minutes, and if they're not in front, it could be a long afternoon for them.
So the key to Manly, they have to be ahead in the first 10, 15, otherwise it's...
Well, yeah, I mean, they felt sorry. And the Warriors are rolling in a sense, but you just expect more, They've got some quality players there. They just expect more. There's some reads.
Do they not have the personnel, or is it an attitude thing?
It's a bit of both. Be a bit of both for sure.
It's more worrying if it's just attitude, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, the personnel. And that's what I think Parramatta were in some of their games, was attitude. And Manly have sort of slipped into that little, slipstream now okay, we're halfway through the year, we're not going to make the eight, we've got every excuse, but you still need to go out there and perform. You're still playing for a contract, some people, so... But they're in real danger of slipping down to the bottom of the ladder if they don't fix things.
And the team that beat them on the weekend, the Warriors from 9th to 7th, the Sharks, Dragons and Roosters still in the middle there. They didn't move on the weekend.
Yeah.
You can catch those every week.
Yeah, Power Rankings. We do them every Monday. They're out Tuesday morning. Timmy Keeble does a fantastic job helping me go through all the data while we get that all together. So big thanks to him. But loving doing the power rankings. It's a tough time now through Origin because you got four games 1 week, then a full round next week. But yeah, Timmy's been great in helping me run our eyes over the teams and where they're predicted and where they're tracking.
Big week for the NRL, not only because Origin last week and Origin 2 next Sunday, June 24, but officiating changes. So all the applause has started. All right, so let's look at one. No more nitpicking, basically the message from Todd Greenberg. The start of 2018, referees were instructed to crack down on the play the ball and getting teams onside. This is what Todd Greenberg had to say about the current situation and the changes going forward.
I think we're absolutely on the right path. At the beginning of the year, we said we would do a couple of things. We'd try to fix the play the ball. Fans were fed up with it. And to be fair, I think that's pretty much complete. We said we would keep the players apart and make sure the 10 metres was policed. And the other thing the fans told us very much so, as did players and clubs, was we've got to enforce those rules inside the 20 metres. So we've been doing that. There has been a tendency, I think, for the referees to continue to nitpick. So we've got to be really careful that we find the balance. And this is always a balance. We want to see the flow of the game continue. There has been a lot of penalties in the first half of the year. I am desperately keen to make sure we find that balance. I don't want referees looking for penalties. What I want referees to do is police those areas that we've tasked them to do and allow the game to flow. As I said, they're not going to be perfect, but that's the strong directive that will continue to come.
No more nitpicking. A fan or not a fan?
I'm a fan, but I'm confused as to why it's taken us 15 rounds to get to where we are. For me, that instruction should have been given to the referees at the start of the year. I'm glad Todd Greenberg came out, and I understand that the fans, some of the fans on Twitter and social media, they love that. They love how the game's being refereed at the moment. They don't understand why players can't get on. They don't understand when an analyst such as myself comes out and says that a team's earned the right to be offside. That's how the game's been played. It's a game of momentum swings. You earn the right to be on the front foot, but fans don't understand that. And now Todd Greenberg realises that. I'll put it this way, Zach. If so many former players, analysts, journalists, people that have known the game for so long think that it was bad for the game, it must be bad for the game, how it was being played, how it was being refereed. So they're going to change that this week. I applaud Todd Greenberg for coming out, but I just feel it's a bit too late. And you know, the game has suffered this year because of it.
All right, so what changes will we see out of this going forward?
I think you won't see the nitpicking in terms of offside. You know, if a team plays the ball and they drop it in the corner and one guy was a foot offside, they're not going to bring that back because you're letting the person that dropped the ball off the hook. That's part of the game. Yeah, you might be half a foot offside, but it all evens out. It's like when a team has, for the first 10 minutes, they have 80% of possession, right? And we're commentating, we've worked together, and they're commentating, and you're going, righto, oh, how do they get back in this game? They've only had 20% of possession. When we finish up the stats, it always finishes 48-52, 50-50, 46-54. It's always evens out, and the players decide the outcome of the result. This year, unfortunately, I don't think the players have been in charge of the outcome of the result.
So we'll see a change of the officiating this weekend. Will we see a change from the players and coaches, and will they try and get away with more?
Oh, certainly. And that's what the game is. It's all about, you know, what you can get away with in every tackle. There's a penalty in every tackle, we know that, but you can't ref every tackle, you know, the same. So I just hope the referees go out there and back themselves. I think if you're nitpicking, you have to nitpick everything, otherwise if people get upset with not every call going their way. So it's important for the referees to go out and enjoy themselves. You know, back yourself. As a commentator, I want to see you enjoying yourself in part of the game. Gavin Badger is one of the best in the game at enjoying himself. Matt Chechen, they go out there, yeah, they can be wrong a couple of times, but you live with that.
Does it take the pressure off the refs as well? Because they're not looking for as much?
It'll be 50-50. I think, you know, if they come out and one referee has a game with 6 or 7 penalties and someone else has 15 because they're still coming down from that, they're going to cop some criticism. Our game's not perfect. There's a scoop that you can write about everyone. Our game is not perfect. But, you know, we're getting back to how players have played for a long time.
And does less penalties mean, on a positive, less penalty goals?
I hope so. I hope so. I hope there's more tries. I hope we see the next crusade, Zach, is the 7 tackles. It's time to go back to 6 tackles. It's time to tweak that a little bit. Again, it can easily change it outside the 30. It remains 7 tackles. inside the 30. You bring back the kick to the wing. How good was Vunivalu scoring on the weekend over Corey Oates?
It was great.
That doesn't happen if you're 21 coming into grade. It doesn't, because you don't do the
kick. I haven't even brought your soapbox out yet, and you're already getting back to the seventh tackle rule. I reckon you've brought it up about six or seven podcasts this year.
That's fine. I must be right. Look, I was right with the referees. I must be right about the seventh tackle rule.
All right. Crackdown on foul play. That's the other change this week. And ARLC Chairman Peter Beattie and Todd Greenberg spoke about that earlier this week.
So from this weekend, we're basically allowing referees, if there's a cheap shot, to sin bin for foul play.
If a player is hit late and is hit in a way that we think is detrimental, we've seen some of these incidents, you can name them, I'm not going to, but you will know, that we want to give the power to the referee to put those players in the sin bin. The rules previously didn't allow that to happen. And some of these things don't warrant a send-off, but warrant a sin bin. And we want to make sure we protect our players. Let me be really clear, these are serious incidents. We're not talking about a tackle off the ball that will happen from time to time that will probably warrant a penalty. But really significant tackles that are made off the ball that are late and are dangerous, players can expect to be sin bin. The referees are there to referee the game according to the rules, and what we've got to do is make sure we give them the tools and the options to make sure they can do their job. And again, we're putting more power into the match officials, as we should do. These guys have a difficult job every week. You know, they're critiqued by all of us, you and I, every weekend. We all have opinions on their performance. We've got to make sure they do the best job they can. To do that, we've got to give them the tools to act.
You know, any game that doesn't protect its stars is not worth a salt. I mean, really, why do fans go to a game? They want to see Jonathan Thurston play. They want to see Cameron Smith play. They want to see Nathan Cleary play. They want to see these heroes.
I want to just say that this is the difference between now and the old rule, okay? So shoulder charges, crusher tackles, dangerous throws, high tackles, you can now be sin bin for, as long as the ref thinks it's more serious than a penalty but less serious than a send-off. In the past, the ref could only sin bin a player if the player was placed on report and if the injured player or the player was injured and unlikely to return for the match. So they could have sin bin players in the past, but is that a good change? Do you like that change? It doesn't matter. So Aidan Caesar earlier this year, example.
Yep.
He's hit high by Sam Burgess. If Aidan Caesar was to go off with a broken jaw or off for a HIA...
Well, he was placed on report, so
he was. Exactly, and didn't look like he was going to return.
So what they've done there, Zach, is they've just spread out the rules. It's the exact same rule.
Do you like it, though?
Love it. It should be enforced. I love it. I love the fact they've come out and stamped it. But, again, we're halfway through the year. Surely common sense prevails. We know that the stars of the game need to be seen. Why wasn't Charlie Gubb sent to the bin last week for an atrocious tackle on Nathan Cleary? That's the one. We understand, Jonathan Thurston, when you go into the line, we know that there's a chance you may get hit. If it's late, unacceptable. But if it's bang, bang, then you understand, you know, that's going to happen as a playmaker. But for a person to come through and attack a person while they're in the air, defenceless, give them nowhere to land, it was one of the worst tackles I've seen on a kicker. If that had happened to me, and it happened to me, I think Justin Smith may have done it for the Cowboys. And I said, the next time you come through, I'm going to drop the ball and I'm going to put my foot through your head. Because I can't risk my career by coming down on one leg. Nathan Cleary, he got kick pressure from Aaron Woods early this year. That was unfortunate. You accept that as a kicker, you know you're going to get pressure. But the one where you put up a bomb and you jump a metre and a half in the air and someone comes and doesn't give you a place to land, and for the referee to say that's on report, Nathan Cleary could have been seriously injured. Could have been out of origin. Yeah, imagine that for the TV rights and everything about our game. Disgraceful.
Okay. Charlie Gubb's been given a one-match ban, though. But let's look at the late shots because they've been creeping into the game a little bit. We saw one on the weekend when Aaron Woods took out James Graham. There was a penalty there. In the past, we've seen Jonathan Thurston taken out. Does it matter if it's a playmaker or a prop taken out?
I think so because the prop, that one, I saw Aaron Woods. We'll call him the game. And Aaron Woods went up and it was a late hit that was unnecessary. And actually cost his team 2 points and the game. They had the momentum then. So for me, that one wasn't as serious as when, because he's front on, in terms of JT when his back turns and Gazowski, you know, shoulder charges him, vice versa. You know, we've seen other people turn their back. Junior Paulo hit me, Paulie Paulie hit me out at Penrith, you know, late after I'd passed the ball, my body relaxed, and my AC joint came out. And wasn't the same. Had to get needled for a year and a half after that. So that's the kind of stuff that you can do. It's really a dog shot. Like if you're 120 kilos and you have to take out a halfback late, seriously.
Would this be in the back of the players' minds now, though, not to do it? Because if they know they're going to spend 10 minutes in the sin bin...
You're going to get heavily, heavily criticised by everyone in the media, me included. We've already heard Andrew John speak about it, and I love listening to Joey because he was a playmaker who took it to the line. I didn't take it to the line so much. So for me, if I got hit late, it was usually after a kick or off the ball. But, yeah, for guys that dig right into the line, like your Kieran Foran's, JT... they understand they're going to get hit, but when it's when your neck jolts back, we've got to think about long term as well.
So this is a good move to help.
Great move for the player. Great move. I don't want to come across on the podcast and seem like I'm, bashing everything and my opinion's king of the world. But I get paid to have an opinion, and my opinion is that yes, this is a great decision from the NRL. The only criticism of it is, why are we waiting to round 15? We knew this was a problem. It's been happening to JT for years. I just hope that the crackdown continues. And you're right. It's a little bit different if it's front on. If you run at me front on and you pass the ball and I just miss you, but I've already gone through the tackle, you accept that as a player.
Yep.
But if I've passed the ball and then I get hit, then, and there's no punching or anymore, so you can't get the bloke back unless it's a hard tackle. So... for me, great rule from the NRL.
Right, one player that won't be on the end of a dog shot or any shot potentially in the NRL again, Peter Wallace. Well, your former teammate retired this week. 240 NRL matches, 139 for the Broncos, 101 for the Panthers, 4 origins for New South Wales. He spoke and said this about retiring from the NRL.
Everyone wants to finish on the fairy tale finish or finish on the best that they can, but for me it wasn't a B, so I'm at ease with it now. So yeah, it's a tough call, but I think it's the right one. In the short term, I'll just be giving the coaching staff a hand for the rest of this year, and then move into a role next year, and I think I'd really enjoy it. I'm going to keep trying to a certain degree, keep fit. The club knows if there is, injury crisis or whatever, or, something happens, then I'll be there to go. So
if it comes down to the grand final, someone goes down, you're ready?
I'll have to be, I suppose.
So this could turn into the John Farnham farewell tour. He's staying on as a player, and if they have an injury crisis where Sione Katoa and any of their other hookers or playmakers Wade Egan, Peter Wallace could be seen in the game again.
Yeah, certainly. What a legend of the game. His toughness, pound for pound, one of the toughest guys I played with, if not the toughest. Came back from a couple of times from ACLs, had a ruptured testicle in an Origin game and played on in that game. So, easily one of the toughest guys and a really good guy off the field, a family man, a terrific card player. Team Jaffa, we were called.
Team Jaffa, Cards partners.
Yeah, Cards partners. So when I first came to Penrith, we roomed together, being the halves, and he was the hard, nutty shell, and I was just the smooth chocolate on the inside.
I like it. What a great combination. What a great combo.
Team Jaffa.
Team Jaffa. So what was he like as a teammate? Not only as a Cards teammate, but also a teammate, a guy around the club, because from the dealing with him, the media side of things, he is one of the best people you'll ever have to deal with. Reluctantly... speaks to the media because he's a quiet type and, to us and doesn't like, it's never about him. And I know today he didn't even want to front the press conference.
Yeah.
But he did and said, I'm only doing it once. It's not about me. So what was he like as a teammate?
Yeah, great. He was more a leader with actions rather than words. I think that's why we got on so well, because for me, I could be the aggressive, yelling type in the halves, and he could be the leader that steers us around, and that's what he did. He's just one of those guys that would always look after you. In 2015, when I was dealing with some personal issues, he went out of his way, Origin 2, I think, in 2015, to come and have dinner with me at my house, him and Ivan Cleary, just us three, sat around, kicked around, had a few conversations, and that was all just to see if I was all right. So that's the kind of guy he is. Wonderfully, wonderful family man, and one of those guys that everyone wants to play with. You set out to be the guy that everyone wants to play with, and you know, whilst I probably divided opinion on that front, he was always a guy that no one would ever say a bad word about him. He's such a treasure for our game.
Any stories in particular or any memories stand out with you and Wal? Is he a bit of a jokester around camp behind closed doors? Does he come out of his shell a little bit?
Yeah, he's just like, he's very confident in cards and all that kind of stuff. Very talented, like table tennis player, just good at everything. So, good golfer, but yeah, right into, you know, being one of those guys that could come around, a handyman. Yeah, he'd come around and fix the lawnmower for me. I had no idea how to put it together. I know that's going to shock the listeners.
That's a great lot.
He came around and fixed my lawnmower so I could use it. And but yeah, just one of those guys that you could go to, and he always seemed like that sort of fatherly figure of the group.
You mentioned how tough he was, and how tough he's been throughout his whole career. He didn't find out until he went back for further scans that he'd been playing on without an ACL for a year.
Mm.
So he's been 2 years without an ACL. Players, that can end careers.
Yeah, it can, and that's how tough he is. You know, he's gone out and played. It's pretty much bone on bone. But he's continued to go out and do his job for Penrith, and now he moves aside for the young guys of Katoa and Egan, who are going to be, you know, vital for their chances this year. But yeah, we could sit here and spend the next half hour talking about how good he is, but yeah, what an amazing person.
You said he's good at cards, good at table tennis, good at everything he tries his hand at. Will he be a good coach?
He will. We joked that we'd have a partnership where he'd be the coach that sits in the box and I'd be the angry ant that gets out and runs on the field. So, Wal, if you ever listen to this, I'm available if you need be, but he'll slot into Anthony Griffin's systems out there and probably run the water and, you know, it'd be like Alfie for Brisbane. He'll be out there, a real experience for the halves.
We had a spy out there today, and I've also spoken to the club. I said, what is his role going to be this year going forward? They said, well, right now we're looking outside and he's putting the witches' hats out.
Yeah.
But it just shows that he doesn't care. You know, he's not an NRL player that's gone on. Nothing's too big for me. He's out there setting the cones out. He's just that voice around the halves. Someone like Nathan Cleary, surely that's going to be... I mean, he's got Brandy Alexander there. He's got James Maloney. He's got Phil Gould. And now he's got Peter Wallace.
Yeah, and the important thing for Wal is he has the voice of the dressing room. So for when James Maloney and those Origin guys are away, Wal can uphold the standards of the training and, you know, be on guys without seeming like a coach is into them. So Wal could tell you where to go and what to do on the field, and it feels like he's still playing. So he's going to be important behind the scenes if Penrith are to win the comp this year.
And James Maloney, the captain going forward for the rest of 2018, the right choice?
Certainly. I mean, it was probably out of him and Trent Merrin, to be honest. But, yeah, Mez is playing that kind of footy where it's a bit carefree. He doesn't need the responsibility of being that. And James Maloney, you know, such an experienced campaigner, two competitions, the best game manager in the comp at the moment. No situation's too big for him. He's a perfect choice.
I really like it. And I know Phil Gould said, I think it was a couple of years ago, he said that Trent Merrin's a future captain of his state and country. Big pressure, and I know what he was getting at in terms of the qualities, but he is playing his best footy without pressure.
Yeah, he is. He's done really well to be fit this year. He's was on the fringe of being talked about for Origin. I think past results probably went against him. You know, if he hadn't played Origin, he'd definitely be in there, but past results, you know, the series results had probably gone against him. Freddie wanted to start anew, and but Mez is certainly in the frame, always, you know, for a front row. He can play big minutes, he's fit, and he's going to be, yeah, he's the leader of that pack along with Regan Campbell-Gillard.
All right, let's look at another club from Sydney's West, the Parramatta Eels. They changed things up a little bit leading into their match against the Cowboys, and it worked. So Brad Arthur said over the weekend they changed their preparation, the days, you know, big days, and, you know, tapering down into the game, a lighter captain's run. He got some vision together and said, guys, I want you to run this video session, and gave more responsibility and ownership to the players. Is it a good move, and why would a coach do that?
Well, Ivan Cleary, we did it for pretty much all of 2014 out at Penrith, and what it does is gives the player responsibility for their preparation. You know, you go in and as an edge, you come in and there might be 30 clips there, and you go through the 30 pretty quickly to determine what you need to look at. And then you take it to the team and you show the team that there might be five or six clips. There might be two clips. You know, we really need some help. You know, when the ball shifts to the left-hand side, when Thurston comes around, we really need an extra number. Nathan Brown, we're going to need you to travel from the middle. So it's really gives the players a really extra... responsibility on getting their prep right and some ownership on getting their prep right, because let's be honest. I mean, Parramatta have been dismal this year. Some of their performances have been really, really poor. And they turned it around on the weekend. They had some pride in their jersey. Gutherson continues to be an upstanding captain since he's come back. Continues to apologise to the fans. He's got nothing to apologise about. And on the weekend, his team backed him up. They backed him up through effort. Jared Hayne was outstanding. Really came back with an excitement and energy that they've lacked in the last, well, pretty much all year.
What does it say about the players' relationship with Brad Arthur? Because as soon as people hear, oh, Brad Arthur's, you know, giving the keys to the players and they're doing it, they start to question that relationship and say, oh, Brad Arthur mustn't be the man for the job.
They're the people that don't know behind the curtains. Behind the curtains, that's Brad Arthur going, look, guys, I've put my neck out, I've stood up for you guys, week in, week out, which he has. He's blamed himself a lot for this year. He knows he's been under the pump, but... it's the players have to take some responsibility as well. They're going out there, and Brad Arthur can't do much more but prepare them. They've gone out and put some pretty ordinary performances in. So Brad Arthur's well respected within that group. For me, he will be the coach going forward. I know it's been dicey this year, but they'll get some recruitment in the off season. They need a couple of forwards. They need to look at their half situation with Corey Norman and Mitchell Moses to see who drives the car better, because they look more in control when only one of those guys is out there and Gutherson just runs the ball. So, but Brad Arthur, look, he's tried hard this year just because he's changed things up. I think it's actually a really smart move and he got a result from it. So the people that are all saying that, Zach, don't usually, they've got no idea.
Would you keep using it, that ploy?
No, he might go back to normal this week. He might keep the training the same, but in terms of video, he might just go half-half. He might have a few more clips. He might not have liked how they prepared in terms of enough clips that they saw, but they played pretty well. They're going to have their work cut out for them on Thursday. That'll be the real test. I mean, the Cowboys were ordinary, but the real test is coming up against a competition threat in the Bunnies. If they can put in a performance there, then they can start to look forward to next year, because they know that, okay, we chalked the first half of the year down, we lost the competition there, we lost our chance. But if we can go in and win 6 out of our last 8, you bounce into 2019, you bounce into the pre-season.
Just quickly, I want to touch on the importance of a good bench. You've been speaking about this all season, and I think it's a good time, given we're halfway through, just to look at a couple of benches that you think are good and then some are not so good. So say you look at the Dragons, the names of Lattimore, Mann and Armau, and obviously they've had a couple others, Blake Laurie and Harmay Selle.
Host,
all these guys interchanging. But the three consistent players there on the bench, who in the past haven't necessarily been world beaters, but it's a perfect mix on the bench. So how important is the bench in 2018? Is it more important than it's ever been?
Well, we had three teams on the weekend, Zach, that had wingers on the bench. We had Manly, who had Matt Wright, Kieran Holland, who's nailed down a bench spot for the Bulldogs, and then Jason Nightingale. Kurt Mann started on the wing, and Jacob Host was their 17th man. But that's confusing to me. In a big game, that was a big pack that they played on the weekend, the Bulldogs. And potentially they would have had Kurt Mann and Jason Nightingale on the bench if they had started a forward. So Nightingale only got 7 minutes. So they'll have to try and tinker that, whether he starts. Mann's the perfect utility. I think to win the competition, you're going to have the perfect utility to be able to come off the bench. Two hookers, geez, they'd have to be good at getting the subs right, because we've seen Penrith, right down to the death, pretty much wait to get Egan on. Yeah. So they're not getting their subs right either.
Well, they've had James Tarmo, Moses Leota and Viliama Kikau pretty much consistently
Kikau's
off the bench.
A huge loss.
He's a huge loss. But again, they've been changing that Hetherington-Egan role, whatever. So you just said then that utility, if you're going to win a comp, you need the perfect utility.
Or to get the two nines right.
So who's got that mix? Will Penrith have it once Wonga Blake's in the centres and potentially push Peachy back to the bench?
I think that's what will end up happening. As good as Tyron Peachy's been, that Wonga Blake will probably come back into that side. He may have a couple of weeks in reserve grade, but he'll come back into that side. Melbourne do it well. They pretty much carry four forwards. The Bulldogs have struggled because... And it's not. I'm not doubting the talent of the guys on the bench. It's just that I know... If I was playing and I saw Kieran Holland come on the bench off the bench on the weekend to come in at 9, especially when the game's on the line, and he's been fantastic, to be fair, but geez, I just feel like...
Well, your target goes up.
I'd get really excited knowing that a guy's playing out of position. And you saw Matt Wright on the weekend. He tried hard for 65 minutes, but the Warriors pack just rolls through them. So it's important to get that mix right. I mean, teams that carry two hookers. Look at the Sharks with Brayley and Seguiaro. It's important if you're going to carry two dummy halves that you get that right. You know how long, because the bench players, sometimes they need 5 or 6 minutes to get into the game. You know, Seguiaro is explosive, but he needs 3 or 4 minutes to be able to get everything right rather than come on like his head's cut off and trying to do everything really fast because he's only got 15 minutes. So it's important, and the best coaches get it right, but I've just noticed a trend this year that some... I've called some games and, you know, I've even texted you and said, I don't know how they got that bench wrong. You know, it's such a big pack on the weekend. They could have easily gone with Blake Laurie, give him some experience.
And you mentioned Matt Wright off the bench. Obviously, if Manly didn't have their issues with Jackson Hastings, he's not the perfect utility.
He is. This is dragging on now. I don't know the behind the scenes. We're only going off what we've read. But, yeah, for a young kid to be blackballed like this... You know, after we had the Manly CEO in here saying that, you know, he's always up for selection. Well, obviously he's not, because he's in their best 17. You know, Jackson Hastings, to me, is in their best 17. I don't know what's gone on there fully. We've only gone off what we've heard and read. But, you know, if you're a Manly fan, you'd have to be thinking, why isn't Jackson Hastings playing there? Surely he can give us something out of dummy half, maybe even at six, you know, with what we've had. So... I feel really sorry for the kid. I know that he hasn't... And look, if we all were judged off our past mistakes, I wouldn't have played as many games as I played. But at the end of the day, it's about winning games. And fans don't care unless you're winning games. And Jackson Hastings right now gives you more of a chance to win a game than Matt Wright on the bench.
Speaking of 17, Origin 2, if you're Brad Fittler... No injuries? Do you change anything?
You don't change a thing. There's no reason to change it. Hopefully... They start what's a long dominance for New South Wales because we need it. But, yeah, they played well in the first Origin. I mean, yeah, there was talk, yeah, do you replace Peachy with Sims? But for me, you don't. You leave that 17, they get a chance now to win the series. Peachy would have come on a lot earlier, I think, if Cook was, no good. But Cook came good and they end up doing the job.
All right, so on the flip side, Queensland, this is the last time... Like I said, we'll speak before Queensland are named.
I think offhand Goway needs to come into the side. He needs to come in. The guys under pressure, without going through the full side because we don't have time, but the guys under pressure are Gavin Cooper, Cohen Hess, Wallace has been talked about as maybe going back to the bench, and Matt Scott starting. Those three guys are probably under pressure. But for me, offhand Goway needs to come in. Milford's out. He'll be out of the 17 from what we're hearing. And they may need to change McCulloch and Hunt. Maybe Hunt goes into 9, Morgan to 7, Munster at 6, and then you have either Boy Wonder, Kalen Ponga at fullback, or Billy Slater if he's right. So, as a New South Wales fan...
You hope they don't play Ponga?
No, if they don't pick Ponga, I don't know how they can win the game. And I know that will bite me on the bum come next week if they've won the game. And but for me, they need Ponga in the side.
If Billy Slater plays...
He's on the bench. He's 14. And you can make replacements. You can have two fullbacks. You can put him on the wing. You can let him go find the ball. Look how well Tom Trbojevic went and found the ball from that right-hand side. They exclusively attacked down the left. They made Will Chambers make tackles. And then all of a sudden, that left-hand side with... with Kafusi and Chambers were making tackles, and they came up with a couple of errors, and New South Wales punished them.
Yeah, make sure you listen to next week's podcast because we'll give a massive wrap and go into in-depth into the squads and what both teams need to change, especially Queensland, if there's any chance of winning Game 2. Remember, Holden State of Origin Game 2 at ANZ Stadium, Sunday night, June 24. You can get tickets at nrl.com/tickets. Also, the first ever Holden Women's State of Origin is at North Sydney Oval on the Friday before that. So that's next Friday, June 22. I'll be there.
I think the residents are on before the big one as well. Yeah. New South Wales residents versus Queensland residents. So if you are watching the ISP through Channel 9, making sure that your team has got the depth. We saw Lachlan Lewis on the weekend, grandson of Wally Lewis. Come out and play a man of the match performance for the Bulldogs. He's on the fringe, so it's a good chance to be able to go out there and watch those fringe guys and try and push for a first grade spot.
All right, now it's question time, Sowie. Inundated this week.
Beautiful.
We picked the best, and apologies to, there are a lot along the same lines.
Yep.
A lot of people don't like the time wasting in the game at the moment. We'll get to some of those. Tony Sharp, chances of State of Origin game being played in the UK, London would have probably to be the best option. Do you like that idea?
No, I don't. I'm a traditionalist. I love it between New South Wales and Queensland. I know they want to grow the game, and I'm at loggerheads but with a lot of people, but I don't see why we take it out of Sydney and Brisbane.
All right, Jacob Morris, why doesn't the game look at captain's challenge, take some of the responsibility off the refs? They trialled it a couple of years ago in Holden Cup.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's always a chance for the game to grow. It works well in the NFL. I think if you can style it off that, where you know you have two challenge or one challenge a half, I think you could do that.
All right, Grant Marley, when will the time-wasting conversions and penalties be addressed? He believes we're losing about 8 to 12 minutes of playing time every game due to time taken just on kicks. Would it not be simply easier just to stop the clock every time before they even go for the kick? It means you're actually getting 80 minutes of footy.
Yep.
You like it?
Of course.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah, you can't complain about time-wasting if every time the ball goes out or is dead, they stop the clock. It's easy.
Now, Steve Smith, I don't know if it's the Aussie...
it could be. He's a big Roosters fan.
Captain. Why bother having scrums when the ball is put into the second row? So off the back of that, what would you like to see happen with the scrum?
I'd like to see two things. I'd like to see the scrum continue, but I'd like to see the scrum packed where the ball goes out. So if I kick the ball from 50 metres or 40 metres and I pull it up a metre out from the goal line, I think that a scrum should be packed a metre out from the goal line,
wow,
inviting back a contest into the scrum.
That would be very, very interesting, wouldn't it?
You can write that one down, Zach, and
I will.
You can put that on the cover of NRL.com.
So, and really have players like contesting for the ball again?
Well, you'd have to, otherwise you get pushed over and you can.
And where does the ball have to be fed in? Because these days it's 99.9% of the time.
If you feed it in the front row where it is now, you'd find that because they're on the line, the team could push in, so they'd have to almost feed it in, because if you feed it back row, as soon as it goes in, it's a disadvantage to have it fed in the back row there.
All right, Arfa Afamasaga, I hope I've got that right. What do you think of Kyle Felt in a Maroons jersey?
Oh, he's a fantastic player, but he's nowhere near Gagai or Val Holmes. And then, you know, guys after that, Darius Boyd, congratulations to him, retired from rep footy, but... yeah, he's a ways to go, Kyle Felt, if he's in a Queensland jersey.
Talented, but this year he's in a struggling side. He's probably not getting the
votes. For a while, he's not taking the wing jersey off those two.
Okay. All right. Time to preview round 15.
Here we go.
All right, the Eels and Rabbitohs kick things off Thursday night, ANZ Stadium. Rabbitohs...
They were terrible last week,
the Rabbitohs.
They were terrible. That's how bad they were. But look, they'll bounce back. Sammy Burgess... I spoke to him on the weekend and he was aware that, you know, they got away with that one. They should have lost it, but they'll bounce back in a big way, the Bunnies.
Seven rep players also, with the three Burgess brothers and four Origin players looking to the weekend ahead. So no doubt they want to go out in the high there. I've got on the Rabbitohs as well. The Cowboys and the Warriors. The Warriors have lost 11 of 12 up there. Their last 11 of 12.
Yeah, and we've seen already last week the Dragons had lost 11 of 12 to the Bulldogs. So for me, I'm going the Warriors. They're rolling. Unfortunately, it's just not the year for the Cowboys.
All right, the Roosters and the Panthers. This should be a cracker.
Yeah, I'm going the Roosters. Kick out is a big out. It's going to be interesting to see how Tedesco matches up, you know, against Watini Zalesniak. They both like to run the ball, but Tedesco's on fire at the moment.
And also we've got Regan Campbell-Gillard against
Hargreaves
and all those kind of guys again. So I can't wait for that one. I've gone the Panthers.
Okay.
The Bulldogs and the Titans.
It's a tough one. I had Bulldogs, but I heard a whisper that Woods and Mbai may not play for their club this week due to their impending moves to different clubs. So I'm going the Titans in a tight one. You could really flip a coin that one. But the Titans and Ash Taylor in particular last week had a chance to win that game. He needs to step up in the big moments and command the ball, because there was times there I just felt he just let the game... you know, go along and hope that something came up instead of looking for it.
The Bulldogs back at Belmore. I hope they have a win for that sake. And I think they've lost six games decided by 6 points or less.
Yeah, they're the new Raiders.
So I've gone the Doggies there. Dragons, Seagulls.
Dragons, easy. No explanation needed.
Sharks, Broncos. This should be a good one.
This will be a good one. And it's got the makings of the old bull versus the young bull in terms of forward packs. Experienced forward pack for the Sharks versus an exciting 110-kilo across-the-board forward pack for the Broncos. So I'm going to take the Broncos in what I think will be an upset.
And they've got a great record, four of their last five down at Southern Cross Group.
And they were good last week.
No doubt that comes into your analysis when you're picking your team.
They were good last week. They'd be disappointed with how they ended the game. Real chance to steal 2 points away.
All right, Jamie Bure won't be there for the Knights this week, but he will be back this year. 6 to 8 weeks on an MCL. It's not an ACL. That's great news considering he's already ruptured his ACL a couple of times in his career. And hopefully Nathan Ross back next week. But they've got a big challenge, the Knights, this week against the Melbourne Storm up in the Hunter.
Yeah, Storm for me. They're looking really, really good. Smith's fresh. They welcome back their rep players, Scott, Chambers. Slater probably won't play, but this Jerome Hughes is a special player himself, so they won't miss a beat.
The Tigers and the Raiders. I found this one tough to pick. Raiders have a great record. I think it's like 132-36 in their last three games or something.
Yeah, they do, but the Raiders, I can't tip them, Zach.
Raiders. Josh Hodgson returning?
So disappointed with the Raiders this year. They continue to throw games away. They continue to let you down. Tigers.
Tigers. With no confidence?
No confidence at all.
All right. Well, that's it for this week.
Thanks, mate.
Origin next week. Make sure you stay across all our podcasts. Joel Gould, Steve Renoff, the Queensland kind of edition. They speak all things rugby league, but obviously with the Pearl on there, it's a little bit biased towards Queensland, right. A bit like you are towards the Blues. An NRL fantasy podcast with Chris Kennedy, Don Brock and Steve Turner. Make sure you rate, review and subscribe. As I mentioned, tune in next week as we continue the build up to Origin 2. Sowie and all our listeners, enjoy the footy this weekend.
Thanks, mate.